Well, we got some awesome stuff from Brandon and Mark last night. And, you know, I think that it's just all building up as we go along. We got some really great instruction on the courage that we need to have as Christians. And we got some great instruction on the trust that we need to have in God, like true trust. And I think that this message that I get to bring to you guys this morning, trust in His power, builds on all of those things in an awesome way. Because, you know, none of the rest of it matters if you don't recognize the power of God. None of it. And, you know, so we're going to get started in Psalm 78, verse 12. We'll just jump right into the text, and then we can ignore it for the rest of our time. So, Psalm 78, verse 12. He wrought wonders before their fathers in the land of Egypt, in the field of Zoan. He divided the sea, caused them to pass through, and he made the waters stand up like a heap. He led them with the cloud by day, and all the night with a light of fire. And he split the rocks in the wilderness, gave them abundant drink like the ocean depths. He brought forth streams also from the rock, and caused waters to run down like rivers. And this passage, great. I was reading through the whole psalm, trying to get prepared, make sure I understood the proper direction that everything was going. And I was almost a little disappointed that I only got these four verses, because I was like, that's just a small fraction of the idea. So I'm excited for, you know, what Mark was able to build off of on the verses leading up and what Phil's going to be able to do after. But there's so much wrapped up in just these few verses. And, you know, we're basically going to cover a whole bunch of Exodus in quick fashion, and then we can get on to the point. Wonders in Egypt and Zoan. First off, I didn't even know where Zoan was. I spent a long time looking for it. Turns out nobody really knows that well either, so I don't feel that dumb for it. Yeah, Zoan, kind of traditionally, they think that's where Moses performed the miracles for Pharaoh, and that's where his dwelling was. So it's kind of like the king's land, so to speak. Yeah. Just jumping right in, Moses was faced with an incredible task. He was supposed to basically go to the world's most powerful leader, go to his face and say, I'm out of here. And I'm taking all my friends with me. Yeah. That's no small task. And I know we could kind of poke fun at him and be like, Moses, you were scared to talk? Yes. It's like, he was terrified because guess who he was talking to? Someone who had the most power. I understand his hesitation. At the snap of his fingers, Pharaoh could have had anything happen to Moses, right? Without God's interference. So, I really do respect the courage that he had in jumping in. And, you know, you see the different miracles that were performed, like the staff turning into a serpent and all these other things. People would know. This guy's standing up to Pharaoh? That's a big deal. So, yeah, that God wrought wonders for his people to build their confidence in his power. And that's really all we're going to talk about. God has to establish himself as the God over all, and that no other God matters. He's the only one that you should serve. He's the only one you should pay attention to. Those other gods are nothing. And in fact, the ones that you tend to worship and see as powerful, it's all a facade. God has to set the record straight, because for his people to truly trust in him and to be able to have a relationship with him, they have to recognize who is really God. And that's really what we're talking about this morning. So if you need coffee, I'm sure there's plenty over there. We'll stay awake. We'll try and keep the energy going. Let's look a few verses down in Psalm 78. I don't know if this is really too much into someone's territory, but if you look at verse 43, he does build up a little bit more on Zoan. You know, verse 43 says, when he performed his signs in Egypt and his marvels in the field of Zoan, clarifies, turned their rivers to blood and their streams they couldn't drink. He sent among them swarms of flies which devoured them and frogs which destroyed them. And there's a phrase that kept coming up in those plagues as you go through them in Exodus, and it was that the magicians that the Pharaoh had were able to replicate all of those things up to a certain point. Yeah. But at some point, even the dark arts and the magic that they were performing paled in comparison to God, and it didn't matter what tricks they pulled out of their hat. They couldn't compare with the power of God at some point. Yeah. And there's a point there for Pharaoh where he has to contend with that. You just witnessed something, and you witnessed your guys do the same thing. You can feel good about yourself. Yeah, we're on the same playing field. But after your guys got beat by God's guys, I'm going to imagine the worry stepped up a little bit. Because he starts to recognize this isn't just something, some trick. There's some real power to this thing. Let's turn back to Exodus chapter 7. Now I'm going to try and paint a picture for you guys to the best of my ability. I have tried in the past couple of years to read more. I cannot read good. Yeah. So I'm trying to get better at it. And so I've tried books that were well above my reading level. I'm not sure when they will be my reading level. There's plenty of them that I've read, and I'm like, I got nothing out of that. I finished it, but I got nothing out of it. Good on me for pushing through. there's a lot of stuff like that. But one thing I've realized in trying to learn to read better and try to understand what I'm reading better is that I struggle with scale. Yeah. A book can spend all of its time telling me about this magnificent big building, and then the moment that they turn to a character, I forget that building exists and never think about it again. Yeah. Same thing with conversations. There'll be like a guy, and he'll be before a crowd giving a speech or something. I'll forget that the crowd's even there. All I can see when I'm reading is who's on the page right then. Everything fades into the background, and there's nothing else. It's just blank. So, probably on my part. So, that's kind of difficult to approach the scriptures that way, especially when we're talking about something like the power of God. Anytime I read the miracles in Egypt, My brain kind of makes it the smallest version of it possible so that I can understand, right? But these things were huge. These are miracles in front of millions that they all can witness and that they all can see great power in. Yeah. The picture does need to be painted, and you do need to recognize the scale of those things. So that's kind of what I'm going to try and do. I'm going to try and take this stuff from the Psalms that he brought up and show just the grand scale of it and the grand power of it, because that's huge for me. I can read it and I can be like, God parted the waters. That's pretty cool. Or you could see all of the other cool stuff with it and think about, well, how high was the water parted? How high did the waters go? Dry land underneath. How wide was the path? It was a single file line through, right? All million of you got to hop in line and one at a time go through. Yeah. Not a chance. Scale is one of the hardest things for me to grab onto with this, but it just makes it more impressive as you see it. In Exodus chapter 7, you get in verse 5, the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the sons of Israel from their midst. And that really reinforces the whole point of why God even did any of this stuff in the first place, and Asaph's bringing it into his psalm, because God's point in doing any of that stuff is to recognize who's really God. Who's in charge? Who has the power? And even the Egyptians were going to understand exactly who God was by the end. There would be no question. They could certainly lie to themselves, but there's no question who's really God by the end of this thing. And that's the inevitable conclusion. So, the Red Sea. That crossing had to have stretched wide. I mean, 600,000 men coming out. Let's just call it 1 to 3 million for easy numbers here. It's a pretty wide net. But even 1 million people trying to go through a channel. And let's just picture this. You have the cloud of God blocking the Egyptians from coming, and it also describes the pillar of fire guiding the way. There's a lot of debate on that one as to whether it was one or two pillars. I kind of thought it was interesting to think of it as one pillar that overarched everything and led the way. But you got the sea parting, and I actually love the animated movie that they did where you see the whale in the water. And I was like, oh, that changed that for me. That's power right there. See them going through that stuff on dry land? Their feet aren't stuck with all this mud trying to go through. It's dry. The power of God stopped an entire superpower from getting to them and led them across water on dry land. Don't discount that just because you've heard it. And it's the most basic Sunday school story, right? That's kind of where I come from, too, is I've heard this stuff my whole life. And I've heard the reduced version a little bit because some of the stuff isn't as friendly. So it kind of mutes the power of it, though. I want to show you something here with the Exodus crossing. Go to Exodus 14. And, obviously after they get through, they could see the armies of Pharaoh, the clouds gone, and the armies of Pharaoh are headed into the waters. I like to imagine that they got just about to the end by the time God let the waters go. Yeah. Oh, you were so close, yet so far. Right? Exodus chapter 14, and look at verse 30. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. When Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. You know what you normally don't hear with the Exodus is the fact that when they turned around, they saw the bodies washed up. They saw their enemy dead at their feet, knowing our God, his power is what brought us out. And it even says they believed. That conviction. Man, that amplifies that thing like times a million. Yeah, the crossing was great. Everything with it's great. The baptism of Moses, as Paul calls it. But to see the enemy dead at your feet, knowing that the power of your God conquered all, and that they're sitting there powerless, no longer having a hold over you, that changes everything. You can see why it's probably a really good picture of our baptism at that point. You know, that cloud and fire then continues to be a guide for them. There's a few spots in Scripture that it tends to talk about them as one thing. So I tried to picture that one as maybe, you know, the fire's on the outside and a lot more visible at night, and then it kind of goes to the inside during the day, and it's just more of a cloud. Take what you will. Maybe it changes back and forth. I think that there's a lot of different ways that people can picture that. But what I remember with it is when AI started kind of popping up, that was the first thing I ever saw. The first AI-generated video, somebody put in the prompt for what that pillar of fire would look like, and that was cool. Now you just picture like a tornado in the sky and the clouds start swirling. You see the funnel coming down, but instead of clouds, it's fire all the way down. There is such thing as a fire tornado. That's one of my favorite things to bring up because you think like a tornado is pretty bad, but like imagine it lights on fire. So yeah, it just goes through your house. You're like, how could it get any worse? It can. So yeah, it's a fire tornado. That thing's impressive, man. But nothing on this scale. This thing's like a behemoth spinning in the sky. I would have been scared of it, 100%. Even the cloud would have been terrifying. They see that thing descend on the mountain, and there's lightning and thunder and all this stuff, and they're sitting at the base of it, scared out of their minds, like, yeah, you go ahead, Moses, you talk to him. You did that to Pharaoh. You did pretty good with that. We'll let you go. Okay. Terrifying. The power of God had them backing away in fear. But they were supposed to follow this through the wilderness. He was a guide. It was to show them, I mean, who can do that? You know, the magicians of Pharaoh couldn't create this whirlwind. I mean, I picture that clouds, and I kind of picture it with no wind. And they weren't blowing away the whole time trying to follow God. But yet you have this pillar just kind of floating there. And they're supposed to follow that, because who could do something like that except the one who has power over all creation? Who? The water from the rock. Now, this is the one that's most embarrassing to me, in my opinion. Yeah. Because I genuinely thought of it like a little spigot. Like if you were to tap a tree, you know, just a little bit of water coming out of the spigot. That's how I thought about it for the longest time. Like, Moses got the water to come out, and then they all just took turns one at a time drinking from the spigot. Yeah. Like they would have been thirsty by the time a few of them went through, and they would have had to hop back in line. Like that is not happening, man. It was kind of like in gym class, I played basketball for a little bit growing up. I never brought a water bottle because I was super smart. And I just always had to drink from the water fountain. The thing is like half the team had to do that. And we just finished running. I'm not running to the water fountain. That's very far. And so I'm not going to drink out of that. And by the time that coach says back to the line and we need to be running again, I've got to the front of the water line and I was finally starting to get a drink, and now I got to run back out there. And I'm sitting there like, that was not refreshing at all. I barely got a drop of water, and now I got to jump back out there and get going. That's not what it was like for Israel. They weren't drinking out of the Dixie cups with the 5-gallon bucket either. Now, this thing is a gigantic rock that gushed water out of the top and created a lake down below. They drank out of that. Yeah. Like I said, I struggle with scale, okay? That's so impressive, isn't it? To think that God literally causes this rock to split in half and water is gushing. He uses the word gushing. That's so cool. Absolutely flooding the valley down below, and everybody can take a drink. It's power. I don't know anybody else who was ever able to tell a rock to give them water, and it gushed out. I love the fact that he uses this stuff, and it's a powerful image for us, because we've never seen anything like that. We probably won't ever see anything like that. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I liked it so much when Brandon went here that I figured we should read it again. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and really, we got to bring this thing to the New Testament conclusion. The Old Testament showed us some really awesome stuff, some power unlike anything we've ever seen or ever will see. Like I said, it produced faith in people. It made them believe in God because they got to witness the power. But may I remind you that they died in the wilderness shortly after. It wasn't the long-term faith. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we'll read 1 through 6. You know, that I don't want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food. All drank the same spiritual drink. For they're drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. I also felt like a heretic for thinking the rock was small. Yeah, the rock was Jesus. Jesus is big and strong. So, verse 5. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased. They're laid low in the wilderness. Now these things happened as examples for us so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved. It's an interesting conclusion that Paul comes to here, because he says, yeah, they saw all that stuff. They saw the power of all those miracles in the wilderness, things that you couldn't believe. And they died in the wilderness, not ever entering the promised land. Paul's conclusion is like, this was supposed to be an example for you. God's power helped bring them there. But there was nothing keeping them there. They didn't have the faith to actually continue on. And the miracles that we can look at, the powerful things that we can see in this physical realm, are great. But they are not something that produces a long-term faith. They are not something that's going to produce you making it to the promised land. That's not actually the real power that God's interested in showing. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 7. I'm tiptoeing around Hebrews 12. So, Hebrews 12, I told Jake and I wasn't going to go there, so, but I am going to talk about it. Hebrews 12 is all about, you have come to a mountain that you can't approach. Guess what? Israel was scared, terrified. You go up, Moses. You'll do great. I couldn't. I'll let you. Yeah. Okay. I mean, God literally coming in this form of fire inside of the cloud, descending, thunder and lightning and smoke billowing. I'd probably be scared of that too. It's terrifying. But we have a whole other mountain that actually is approachable. Yeah. And I know the power of God is approachable through this covenant. So, Hebrews chapter 7, verse 16. Priesthood, Jesus, Melchizedek. 7:16 says, who has become such not on the basis of a law of physical requirement, but according to the power of an indestructible life. For it's attested of him, you're priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. For on the one hand, there's a setting aside of a former commandment because of its weakness and uselessness. For the law made nothing perfect. And on the other hand, there's a bringing in of a better hope through which we draw near to God. There is something better. A better hope. And it's not just like, hey, my God can lift a bigger rock than your God can. You know, my God, you know, like, he can make that river red. Here's only pretense. Yeah. My God's bigger than your God. He can beat him up. Yeah, that's... Oh. Where's the real power in this thing? God used those physical things to get their minds away from the gods of the earth, but he wasn't actually showing them the true power that he held yet. Because the power that he holds is completely different. Yeah. Power of an indestructible life, eternal power. God's power is not of this earth. And if his power isn't of this earth and he's able to do those things on this earth, you should recognize just how powerful he is. So, I think another aspect of this that I have to bring up is the spiritual stuff is really hard for us to grab onto. Yeah. And God has a tremendous task that he has to overcome in that. He chose not to make them similar for good purpose. But there is a difficulty in us understanding those things. Let's turn to Matthew 22. We can get a look at that, and it, you know, Jesus spent a lot of time trying to help people understand spiritual things. And oftentimes, he got really ridiculous responses to things Because if you're looking through them with a spiritual lens, and then you hear these answers from a physical mindset, you're just like, why would you even think of that? Matthew 22 is a good example of that in verse 23. On that day, some Sadducees, who say there's no resurrection, came to Jesus and questioned him, asking, "Teacher, Moses said if a man dies having no children, his brother as next of kin shall marry his wife and raise up children for his brother." They pose a scenario. "Now, there were seven brothers with us. The first married and died, having no brother, left his wife to his brother. So also the second, third, down the seventh, last of all, the woman died. In the resurrection, therefore, whose wife of the seven will she be? For they all had married her." First off, they don't even believe in the resurrection. So, you know, trick question out the gate. Probably could have figured that one out. But on top of that, what kind of resurrection are we thinking about? They're like, they probably should, yeah, she'll be married still. Yeah, that makes sense. Jesus is like, who said anything about marriage being involved in that? Don't you recognize the mistake you've made? You've applied a physical rule, a physical structure to something spiritual, and you completely miss the point of it all. And trust me, I think we do this more often than we realize ourselves. It's really easy to do, because it's hard to remove yourself from the physical realm. It just is. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 1. God has the job of describing the indescribable with the things that are spiritual. Because exactly a blind person who's been blind their whole life, you describe color to them. Well, it's like blue. Thanks. It's like blue. If I had a reference for that, I'd know exactly what you were talking about. People have tried. I mean, maybe give them some, it feels like this. But they don't have a reference for that. They have no reference for it. It makes no sense. Best you can do. God's job is to describe a realm that we have never seen and try and put it into terms that we can understand, and the rest we have to have faith in. I find that incredible. And Ezekiel actually gives us a good insight into that, I think. Ezekiel chapter 1, and I love this section here because it's just so weird. I think a lot of people have talked about the biblically accurate angels from this. We're not going to read that part, but I think, you know, like if you've seen the pictures, that he's like, there are rings, and then they have eyes all over them, and you're like, I've never seen anything like that. Artist renditions of that stuff, I mean, you could look up online, what was the chariot like in Ezekiel? You'll get a ton of different pictures that look very different. Yeah. Let's look at it. Verse 4, as I looked, behold, a storm wind was coming from the north, a great cloud with fire flashing forth continually, and a bright light around it, and in its midst something like glowing metal in the midst of the fire. This is not that bad. I can understand this. This is pretty easy. Within it there were figures resembling four living beings. This was their appearance. They had human form. Still good. Yeah. Each of them had four faces and four wings. And I get lost right there. Because how do you have four faces? Are they on each side of your head, looking each direction? Or are they all on the front? Yeah. And if they were all on the front, what does that look like? I don't even want to know. It's a horror beyond my imagination. Yeah, it's terrifying. And four wings. I could probably get that picture too. Their legs were straight. Their feet were like a calf's hoof. And they gleamed like burnished bronze. Legs straight. Foot. Calf's hoof. Yeah. Did they have a human foot and it was straight? Human leg and it was straight? I have no idea. I'm going to go with that. Maybe they had no knees. Yeah. Yeah. Under their wings on their four sides were human hands. As for the faces and the wings of the four of them, their wings touched one another. Their faces didn't turn when they moved. That makes me think it's the four-sided, you know? Yeah. Even then, that's weird, man. It'd make parallel parking and all that stuff easier, I think. But, I mean, beyond all that, that's just weird, man. That's rough. Verse 10, the form of their faces, each had the face of a man, all four had the face of a lion on the right, the face of a bull on the left, and all four had the face of an eagle. Now the faces are different creatures. You're not getting a date, man. That's rough. What? Look them up. You'll get a different picture every time. But I can't even start to imagine. I struggle with scale, nonetheless, things that aren't even human. A creature like you've never seen before. And I think that's some of the most interesting stuff when you get into these visions, that people are seeing something from heaven. And honestly, I think that this is just the best description, and it's not even close to what he actually saw. Because he sees something that's just so out there, so beyond anything he's ever seen in his life. And here's the best thing he could come up with. I don't know, it looked like his feet were straight and they had calf's hooves on it. And I think one of the faces was an eagle. Not sure. It's the closest creature I could figure out. He's trying to describe something that is indescribable. There's a point to all this stuff. But I think that it really highlights the difficulty that we have with some of the spiritual realm. It is difficult to understand. It is difficult to come to a real tangibility to it. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And really, we're going to bounce around through here, because 2 Corinthians chapter 4, really a lot of the chapters around it highlight everything so well. We could have just actually spent the rest of our time reading this and just say, yep, have a good day. This is what we actually want. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And let's start with verse 5. Yeah, we don't preach ourselves, but Christ Jesus as Lord, and ourselves as your bondservants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said light shall shine out of darkness, is the one who has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, so that the surpassing greatness of the power will be of God and not from ourselves. You know, we're afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not despairing, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying about in the body the dying of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. We live or constantly being delivered over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh. So death works in us, but life in you. We're going to read a little bit more, because it's just all the good stuff right here. This is what I wanted to lead to this whole time. Yeah. I loved verse 7, the surpassing greatness of the power will be of God and not from ourselves. Yeah. There is great spiritual power in the new creation, and that power is not us, it's the power of God working through us. And that's actually such an exciting thing. The trouble that we run into is that we often cannot recognize that power. We don't see it. Or we think, man, that was really cool what I just did. Yeah. The thing that Paul's really trying to reinforce here is that power is God working through you. And it's power unlike anything you've ever seen. Let's reinforce the ideas from Psalm of Asaph. God is able to make the entire sky clouds and fire and lightning, and he's able to part seas. He's able to change a piece of wood into a serpent. He's able to turn water to blood. He's able to issue all the plagues. He does all of these things, and to him, that's just a means to the end to get to the spiritual power that actually makes a difference. It's nothing for him to do that. All he had to do was speak to bring the world into existence. He barely needs to say a word to make it do all that stuff. Yeah. That's not the real power. Yeah. He was able to just speak the world into existence. It couldn't have taken too many words from what I read in Genesis. The rest of the Bible is dedicated towards his spiritual power, and there was a lot more words than that. that should give us an idea of just how powerful this new creation stuff is. And the spiritual power that God has is well above and beyond anything else. Because that's been the focus the whole time. Let's get to the spiritual stuff. Let's get to that power. We can stand in awe at the physical things, but it's peanuts compared to the rest. It's nothing. And that's kind of Paul's point in this 2 Corinthians passage. He's like, your body will fail you. I'm renowned for having my body fail me, my knees in particular. They failed me on multiple occasions. Amen. The body is going to go down. It's going to fail you. But the spiritual you is renewed day by day. How much do you think matters if the flesh fails you? If your spiritual power never wanes? Let's look at the end of the chapter here in verse 16. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For a momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And knowing that fact about the things that are seen are temporal and the things that aren't seen are eternal, why would we put much stock in the power of God for the physical things that he's done? Because all of that stuff's temporary. If our God is truly powerful, his power is also in the things that are not seen in the spiritual realm, the things that are eternal. Failure to recognize that is failure to recognize the power of God. Failure to believe in the one thing that he's been trying to point us to this whole time. We'll close with Romans chapter 1. I feel like it's a necessity to go to the book of Romans around these parts. We'll keep the trend going. God's trying to get us to see where his real power lies. And that's actually in the spiritual things that he can help accomplish. There was a lot more power in the baptism of the Christian today than there was in the baptism of Moses. The act of new creation that he accomplished in those waters far outweighs any of this parting of the Red Sea. It's a spectacle and it's cool, but it's far outweighed. And in Romans chapter 1, he does talk about the creation in verse 20. Since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God and they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, exchanged the physical for the spiritual. When you lean too hard on that physical, you're done. And that's part of the failure that we had to learn from with the Israelites in the wilderness. They never got past that power. And the book of Amos actually tells us that they brought the gods from Egypt and continued to worship them in the wilderness too. They didn't even get the physical point. Nonetheless, the spiritual point. Who has real power? And what is that real power? Where does the source of that lie? It lies in the eternal, not the temporal. And I just love the way that verse 20 put it. With his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature are clearly seen. You want to clearly see the power of God? You got to look to the spiritual, not the physical. Thank you.